It's a beautiful morning.
Certainly know what that theme song means by now. That's right. It's another episode of Health Matters. Health Matters is brought to you by the Forsyth Cancer Care Center, located right here in Reno, Nevada, 521 Hamel Lane. I want you to write this phone number down, because if you have a family member, friend, or an associate who's been diagnosed with cancer, remember the Forsyth Cancer Care Center is truly the answer to cancer. So give them a call at 775-827-0707. This show is hosted by none other than Dr. James Forsyth and his wife, Earlene. So without further ado, let's go to the host of the show, and also the host of Grace, the very popular Bible study show, Earlene Forsyth.
Well, hi.
Hi, how are
Listen,
you?
Listen, how was your Valentine's Day?
By the way, I loved that prayer on
you
Grace
did.
And the song
you
did. I loved how you reworded that song.
Yes.
That song was number one in the world, and you reworded it, so I know you're going to be number one.
It was the theme song for the South Korean Olympic Winter Olympics, and it was also the latest theme song for the Chinese Olympics in Beijing. So that is their attempt to instill in all the athletes and all the people watching, millions of people watching around the world, that globalism is coming.
Amen.
Because remember the words they're saying in that song. There is no heaven. There is no hell. There is no religion. We are all one.
Well, there is no God.
There's no possessions. We are all one. There is no hunger.
Wow. There's no peace.
There's no peace at all. God bless them for that. We love the tune, but the words, that's why Marlene replaced all the words with a biblical meaning.
And I believe in my heart of hearts that rewording of Imagine is going to be number one around the world as well. Thank you, Earlene.
Oh, well, no, thank Jesus. He's the one that gave it to me.
Amen.
He inspired her. She heard it and went and wrote it. Within an hour, she had the words rewritten.
Wow.
Yes, it was easy, actually.
Yeah, he had the words rewritten.
He did.
Yes.
He really did it
through you.
He did. Okay, we're going to get into Dr. Forsyth, your questions that you have coming in.
Yes.
And the first part we're going to spend this afternoon is, what options are available if chemotherapy fails? And the first question is, adults with newly diagnosed cancers for who have had radiation, surgical, or chemotherapy failures, short of hospice care, what often, if any, options are available to them?
Yes, and none of us want to go to a hospice. I don't think most of us feel we're not ready to go. So what other options? And people are often afraid to ask, but that's why we're going to have this on, and we're not going to make this a grim and depressing session. We're going to make this an educational session, because this is what happens in a cancer practice or on a cancer ward. First of all, we're going to talk about surgical failures that include first, and that would be for the common cancers. Let's take breast cancer, Earlene. After post-mastectomy, a modified radical mastectomy, recurrences will occur in general in the order of frequency. So we'll talk about a recurrence in the surgical scar, which is usually a horizontal scar across the middle of the breast that has a nodule come up in it, or an ulcer, or a scab that is a recurrence. That's the most common. Then in the same breast, somewhere deep in the same breast, in the fatty tissue usually it does not go below the pectoralis muscle or the pectoralis fascia. In the same side, lymph nodes, that would be if this were the right breast that was operated on, it would be in the right axillary lymph nodes or the right supraclavicular lymph nodes. Those are the lymph nodes above and below the clavicle. Then in frequency would be the opposite breast. Women with breast cancer will often develop a second cancer in their opposite breast the one that was not operated on. Next in frequency would be through the skin of the breast or the bones, the ribs, the sternum. It could be the spine. It could really be any bone in the body. Bones are more common than what follows next, the liver or the lungs. They come next. Brain metastases are down the line quite a ways, but do occur. And then after that, sometimes the ovaries themselves are involved, especially if this is a estrogen-producing tumor, estrogen-related tumor, which is driven by estrogen. The ovaries become involved in those kind of tumors, but if it was estrogen negative, that would be less likely. And then let's talk about colorectal cancers, folks, because remember, colorectal cancer, second most common cancer after lung cancer in men and women, are about equal numbers of men and women get colon cancer somewhere in the colon, usually in the lower portion of the colon, but they can also occur in the right colon, in the cecal area, or near the appendix. Recurrence then, when it does occur, can also occur, and next in frequency would be the regional lymph nodes around the colon, around the left colon, around the cecum. There may be an obstructive recurrence in the line of resection. In other words, where the surgeon goes in and takes out the malignant polyp or the malignant mass, now it comes back as an obstructing lesion, which requires, in most cases, a colostomy to be formed, usually placed on the left side of the lower abdomen. Then come the pelvic and periaortic lymph nodes and also the peritoneal lymph nodes. Ascites is fairly uncommon in colon cancer, much more common in peritoneal cancer and in ovarian cancer. So the brain mets are way down the line. Brain mets from colon cancer is a rare occurrence. So let's go next to prostate cancer, the most common cancer of all in men. And as you know, after surgery or radiation, there can be recurrences. The recurrences usually occur in the prostate bed if the prostate has undergone a radical prostatectomy, mostly these days done by robots. Also, it could be treated with radiation. And there may be a recurrence in that area. Perhaps the radiation beam did not hit all the quiet little secreted hidden cancers just a few millimeters or centimeters away that didn't get bombed out by the radiation. Then the other recurrences include the seminal vesicles if they're still intact. Then a recurrence in the bladder is not uncommon. It's not uncommon for men to have not only prostate cancer but coexisting bladder cancer, or the prostate cancer may wander up the prosthetic urethra and infect the bladder, so there are recurrences on the inner wall of the bladder. And then come the pelvic lymph nodes. The pelvic lymph nodes may go on either side, and those are often painful. They may also involve the lymph nodes. Deep on either inguinal side. It may also involve the bones of the pelvis, the ilium bone, the pubic bone. They may even go into the hips, the right and left hip, and or the lower spine. Bone metastases are very common in prostate cancer, especially involving the lower lumbar sacral spine, and so on. And it's very rare, incidentally, for liver, lung, or brain metastases to occur in prostate cancer, especially brain. Liver and lung are more common than brain. So that those are what we look forward to finding if we have symptoms relating to that, usually painful symptoms or disturbances in bowel habits, mainly obstructive disturbances such as constipation, rectal bleeding, pain on moving your bowels, etc.
Yeah, these poor patients, you have to really pray for them because they must, number one, they don't want to get the side effects of that chemo, And if they, that chemotherapy has failed them with, you know, getting rid of their tumors,
yeah,
that has to be so discouraging for the patient and the families.
And that's certainly one of the aims of this talk today, is to kind of make people aware. I know these are not pleasant subjects to discuss, but yet again, if you're a cancer patient, or if your parents or your good friends are cancer patients, it's very important that people understand these facts.
Yes, if full dose chemotherapy protocols are not working, what do you do then after that?
Yes, if they're not working, and many times the patient is hit hard with full dose chemo, they're having a lot of side effects from the chemo. The side effects may become unbearable, and so they want to move on. And usually when they want to move on means they're looking for my type of doctor, which is an integrative oncologist, because first of all, we first introduce them to genetic testing, or sometimes called gene testing or genomic testing. We like to call it chemosensitivity testing, but it has about 10 different names. But what it offers in terms of information to the patient and their family is four or five things. First of all, if it's a hormone-driven tumor like a prostate cancer or breast cancer, ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, cervical cancer, or primary peritoneal cancer, which are estrogen-driven, the prostate being testosterone-driven, then hormone blockers will usually come up. And in breast cancer, not only HER2 blockers come up, which is a receptor on the breast cancer cell, which confers actually a worse prognosis because it's a more aggressive tumor usually. But on the other hand, it does. There are HER2 blockers out there that are quite effective. So when we do the IPT, the genomic testing, we're going to get back the best chemotherapy agents, the best targeted agents or immunotherapy agents. Those are the newer ones. Those are the pricey ones. The older ones that are 50, 60, 70 years old are much cheaper. They're off patent. And those are the big guns. Actually, their efficacy rating or kill ratio is much higher. And remember, when you do genomic testing, you're going to get a number back of its kill ratio or its efficacy rating. And we never find any numbers higher than 83%. So just remember that even the supplements have an efficacy rating. So they could be 5% active. They could be as high as 45 or 50%. Rarely, most of the time, they're in the 20s and 30s. They never quite get above that, as for most cases. So what are the other options then? If they don't really want IPT, then we offer hyperthermia. There is a new clinic in Southern California, which is very good. There's a new procedure called thorognostics. What does that word thorognostic mean? It means it's part therapy and part treatment. So it has therapy in it and the diagnostics with it. What it is doing a PET scan here in the United States, going over to Germany because it hasn't yet been approved by the FDA in America, getting a higher dose of the radiotagged isotope on the fructose sugar, and when it comes to the cancer, because it lights up cancer everywhere, but now there's a strong bomb with it. It's like a smart bomb. It has a higher degree of radiation in it and kills the cancer that way. And then there is the technique that we're very interested in, we'll talk more about later, the supportive oligonucleotide technique. This has already shown in some of my patients as much as a 99% reversal of stage 4 cancers. So it's something that we're very proud of. And you'll see a lot more of soon the conventional oncologists in Nevada will learn about it and be using it.
Well, thank God they have some other options.
Absolutely.
You know, if they can't tolerate.
Yes, these other options up to a few years ago when the SOT was developed, there were no other options. There was the option of hospice or going strictly on supplements alone.
Yes. Okay, when patients cannot tolerate the side effects, toxicities of full-dose chemotherapy, what do you do for them?
Excellent question, Erlene, and for our audience who proposed the question, roughly over 25% of our patients refuse any more standard chemo because of all the bad side effects. They include these cytopenias. What does that mean? Cytopenias means with full dose chemo, you're going to knock down your red cells, your white cells, your platelets. And that means that you're going to need transfusions, you may get infections, or you may have bleeding episodes that are often hard to control or stop without getting replacement platelets, or without getting bone marrow stimulants for white cell production, or giving blood transfusions. So all those things can happen. Other things that happen, neuropathies, where your feet and hands are numb. And remember, in our culture, if your fingers are numb, goodbye to internet, goodbye to iPads, iPhones. If you can't find the keys on the keyboard, you're in trouble.
You can't drive either.
Right. If you're driving and you can't find the gas pedal or the brake pedal, oops, you're not going to be driving long, let's face it.
maybe one last time.
Okay. All right. When I introduce them to genomic testing, they understand, probably for the first time, that I'm not guessing at what I'm giving them, because, and please excuse me to my all conventional colleagues, because I was on that side of the fence for many years. I jumped the fence 25 years ago and will never go back to full-dose chemo. With IPT and genomic testing, you're letting the patient's own genes tell you what to do. Now, what could be more helpful than that? You don't have to lie to them. You don't have to look for them. Look in the eye and say, I know this is going to cure you, because you don't know. And oftentimes, if you're getting the wrong drug, you're hurting the patient and not helping them. So God rest you guys. Hopefully, you'll have an epiphany and see the light soon. Again, I know that I'm being rough on you, but it's time you looked around at the rest of the world and see what's going on.
Well, vice versa.
Right.
They look hard on you.
Of course, we,
yes,
we know.
Because they haven't been taught that.
Yeah, and they resent it. And then when I've presented my data to hospitals, they have told me that their cancer center is really doing well, and why would they want to change? And I get.
Well, they're just not educated.
I get the message right away, but this is just my opinion. Remember, this is just an opinion I'm expressing, and I'm not naming names. I'm not.
Well, I hope not.
I'm not. I'm not slandering anyone, but really, it's time that you got out of the money business and think about the patient and all the harm they're doing to patients, and especially your pediatric oncologist, my pet peeve. Leave those children alone. Don't give them full-dose chemo. They don't need it. They will do fine if you only followed my protocols.
Wow.
God bless you all.
Amen. Matter of fact, I'm going to go to our very first text question during this part of Health Matters. This comes from Garrett in Denver, Colorado. Garrett writes in and says, these conventional oncologists, aren't they breaking the Hippocratic Oath?
Yes, Eddie, when the Hippocratic Oath says, do no harm to patients. And when you're giving full-dose chemo, I honestly feel, having been there, done that, you are harming the patient. These poor kids have no eyebrows, axillary pubic hair. They're bald. They have often heart defects.
And they're so sick.
They have cardiomyopathies. They have depressed immune systems. They're more prone to getting severe viral infections, even bacterial infections. And they have neuropathies that may never go away, even with the best neuropathy medicines that are out there now. They just don't work all the time, and they may be left with that the rest of their life. And also, remember, if you're prepubertal or pubertal, you're a male or female, you're going to kill off all your eggs that are in the ovary. You're going to kill off your sperm. You won't be able to have children. Now, think about that. Is the parents of children who get this, they realize that, and they're depressed just by the fact they're not going to see any grandchildren.
Oh, I'm sure their child is.
Yes.
When they find out, yeah, they're not too happy about that either.
Right.
So, incidentally, can I honestly say that with insulin potentiated low dose therapy, which we have tweaked a bit to the light form, where we're adding the insulin right to the bag and giving only a 10% homeopathic dose and fractionated therapy, that the things that I've just mentioned will almost never happen. Now, you never and always doesn't exist in medicine. I realize that. But we almost never see it, any of those things. Thank you very much.
Okay, what about your latest tool in your toolbox, the SOT vaccine? Can you explain that?
SOT, I did mention it already, but let's talk about it again. I love to say the word. It's the supportive oligonucleotide. When they say oligonucleotide, that just means a single one of the nucleotide in the families. That is a technique. Notice it is not called a vaccine. And it is developed by only one genetics lab, and it happens to be the one I use all the time, the Research Genetic Cancer Center out of Greece. I've used other ones in Germany and South Korea. They don't match up. We've been using it for over 14 years. So we're not only getting the five ways of treating cancer things, as I mentioned before, the older chemotherapy, we call that the simple chemotherapy regimens, the newer targeted therapies, all the supplements, including vitamins, minerals, herbs, algae products, mushrooms, everything you can think of, even some big pharma agents that work on cancer, like doxycycline, like naltrexone.
Wow. You know, this gives us right now, if you are paying attention to Health Matters, brought to you by Forsyth Cancer Care Center, write this phone number down. This show is brought to you by Forsyth Cancer Care Center, 521 Hamel Lane, right here in Reno, Nevada. But the number to call is area code 775-827-0707, and we will be right back.
Have you, a friend, or family member been diagnosed with cancer? Dr. Forsyth at the Forsyth Cancer Care Center offers an all-inclusive program to treat adult types of cancer. The Forsyth Immune Protocol Cancer Treatment Plan, in a current prospective study of over 6.5 years and 1,200 adult cancer patients, has produced a remarkable 30 times greater survival statistic when compared to conventional full-dose chemotherapy. Greater than 95% of all their patients choose low-dose insulin-potentiated life chemo therapy, using only 10 to 15% chemotherapy dosing with insulin. Dr. Forsyth has long been considered one of the most respected physicians in the United States, particularly for his treatment of cancer and the legal use of human growth hormone. Located in Reno, Nevada, Dr. Forsyth has seen patients from all over the world. To schedule your consultation today, call 775-827-0707. That number again is 775-827-0707.
Hi, this is Eddie Floyd. Let me tell you about my favorite nonprofit public charity, Wainema Wild Horse Sanctuary, located on the Forsyth Ranch in Hallelujah Junction area. And please go to www.wainemaranch.com. That's W-Y-N-E-M-A ranch.com.
At Northern Nevada Family Dental, we are proud to announce a wide range of advanced dental services by way of the Photona Lightwalker laser. The Lightwalker laser can efficiently and effectively treat most periodontal problems, from deep persistent pocketing to peri-implantitis and a multitude of conditions in between. Have cold sores? We can inhibit the cycle of the virus and sometimes even prevent them from occurring. Do you have a snoring or CPAP problem? Through the amazing healing power of light, we can treat tissues inside the mouth without anesthesia, appliances, or cutting. sleeping, so that after just one treatment, most people sleep better and quieter that same night. By using the power of the laser intraorally, we can also smooth facial wrinkles and tighten sagging necklines, all without you having to be numb, and there's no downtime. It can even be done on a lunch break. Through the FDA-approved Power of Light, these treatments and many more are now available at Northern Nevada Family Dental in Sparks. Have I piqued your interest? Give us a call at 626-7772 or visit us at northernnevadafamilydental.com.
Charbecue the Butcher's Kitchen would like to thank every customer for your loyalty and continued support through these challenging times. Call for takeout and delivery of rib tips, brisket, ahi tuna, roasted veggies, and much more. Charbecue is open from 11 to 7, Monday through Saturday, and delivers hot food safe and healthy. Call 499-5855 for details. 499-5855 Charbecue, as featured on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Get real. Get into Charbecue Reno.
This is America Matters Media on AM 1180 KCKQ,
a Lotus broadcast station.
The power of radio since 1967.
All right, we're back now. Second half of Health Matters brought to you by the Forsyth Cancer Care Center. And if you have any questions, text them to 775-384-4444. Text them right now, 775-384-4444. This is Health Matters, so let's go to the host, Earlene Forsyth.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Dr. Forsyth?
Yes, I'm here, and I know we're hitting cancer hard today, but there's a lot of questions that people just don't know about, and there's so much cancer all around us, 360,000 deaths a year. Notice we don't have lockdowns for that or masks, and people just go about their own business, even though it's one of the major causes of death in the United States and in the rest of the world. But we just accept it. But now we have to understand it, too. We're not going to just accept it. Let's try and understand it a little better.
Okay, I have question five. What is the gauge used to measure a successful 4 or 6 month time frame following IV infusion of the SOT vaccine? Okay, am I on question five?
Well, no, you know what? It's a new protocol. We can go back and have some questions.
Sure.
Sure. Let's talk about that. The measure of success when we talk about gauging something is done by retesting the circulating tumor cell, or sometimes called the circulating stem cell, and that is a very, very accurate gauge of how much tumor burden the patient has. And the number 5 is important to remember, because if you have under 5 cells circulating in your blood per cc on average, this means that the prognosis is good and that your immune system has a good chance of taking care of it once you've had the right treatment. And if it's over 5, it means you need therapy as soon as possible, because it is an aggressive tumor. So it kind of corresponds with the pathologist who looks under the microscope and says, this is an aggressive, poorly differentiated cancer cell, because what he sees is a lot of division going on among the cells in the biopsy. He sees real ugly cells that have a large nucleus and that occupies most of the cytoplasmic material in the cell. Being a pathologist, I can say this because I've done many of these. And so on. And so that's one of the gauges. With the SOT vaccine, it's given either twice a year or 3 times a year. And the gauge that it is successful, this is a vaccine that's new from the RGCC, the Research Genetic Cancer Center, to remind folks. But this is a historic occasion. I personally, in 50 years of practice, have never seen such a complete remission of a stage 4 patient as a 99% remission in a 4-month period of a man who had spinal and pelvic metastases in his bones and had a PSA of 980.
Wow.
And 4 months later, it went to 8, and he had no radiation, he had no hormone blockers during that period, and no chemotherapy. He just had the vaccine. So we have to attribute all of that to the vaccine, all of it. And that, my friends, is historic, because one out of six of us, men, especially over 60, are going to have prostate cancer sometime in the next 20 or 30 years. And God bless you all, you may not have to worry about it anymore. So pardon me for getting excited.
That's a miracle.
I love
but,
it.
Yeah, let's get excited. And stamp your feet if you can't do anything else there in the nursing home.
I love it.
All right.
Absolutely love it.
Okay. Was that the right question to ask?
Yeah.
Number five. I'm going on to number six now. If the circulating tumor cells do not go down a full 2 points, do you repeat the technique?
Yes. One of the rules with the vaccine is your circulating tumor cell number from the start of giving the vaccine to 4 months later has to fall a full 2 points. That means if you had 4 circulating cells per cc at the beginning of the injection, and 4 months later you get another circulating tumor cell count, and it's now down 2 full points, that would mean it's at 2 cells per ml. That means that you're in remission, and it's a successful vaccine. Now, you may want to add one to that and have another shot just for insurance purposes and really get it out of the way. So if you'd had another one and it does as well as the first one, you'll be down from 2 to 0, or 2 to just a little over 0, because we almost never get real zeros. But it does get close sometimes, and this is going to get very close.
How often do you perform the test?
Well, the test is done at the end of the vaccine. If you do a 4 months vaccine, then it's right. You do another test to the Greek lab for the count only, and they make more vaccine for you. Or you can go a full 6 months and do it. So either 3 times a year or 2x a year, it's done. There are no side effects with the shot. There's no nausea, vomiting, rashes. There's no hair loss, no cytopenias, no neuropathies. It is safe as can be compared to any chemotherapy given. It's more like getting an IV with vitamin C, because you don't have any side effects as a rule with that.
That's great. Can any other treatments be given while the product is working?
Good question. Thank you for that, audience, for that. No, you should not take any IV or oral chemotherapy during the period you're on the vaccine. You can adhere to the supplements that show up on your genetic testing. You can use the right cancer diet. You can generally have healthy lifestyles and positive thinking. You can take things like IV vitamin C, IV artesanate, IV colloidal silver, IV curcumin, IV peroxide, things that are health in general. Good for cancers. You can also take PolyMVA, the product that I did most research on from New York University, Myers cocktail, which most of the naturopaths use. We also recommend no radiation therapy, no hyperthermia, and no theragnostics during the time you're on that 4 month period of taking the vaccine.
Okay, what goals are you trying to achieve in your study?
Well, the study really looks at, of course, the drop in the circulating tumor cell is our gauge, as we just explained, and we're trying to get to 100 patients. We're trying to study any adversities that happen, because this is very new. There's a lot of skepticism out there in the conventional community about whether they work. A few years back, they were using bone marrow transplants for cancers, and they had to stop with some of the cancers, like breast cancer and ovarian cancer, because they weren't working, and they were killing patients faster than the chemotherapy would kill them.
Really?
And we're looking to see what their outcomes are. Are they in a stable remission, which means their tumor markers are staying stable? And they're probably going down less than 50%, though. A partial remission, Erlene, means a greater than 50% reduction in tumor markers or any of the markers. For instance, if you had a lung cancer that was 8 centimeters in size and it's now 3 centimeters, that would be going down more than half, and that would be a partial remission. A stable disease would be that same 8 centimeter tumor that's now 6 centimeters. So it hasn't gone down as much as half. It's gone down less than half, but it's still stable, and it's headed in the right direction. And then there's complete remission early, and Eddie, that is defined as no evident disease by any means of testing. By that mean, how the patient looks, his symptoms, does he have any pain, does he have a wasting syndrome, is his appetite good, is he having nausea and vomiting, having any GI symptoms, is he anemic? Some patients with cancer have what's called the AOM, the anemia of malignancy, which is not a B12 or folate deficiency or iron deficiency. It's just an anemia that comes along with the cancer. Those things, and remember, a complete remission is not a cure. So don't let anyone tell you that after a week of chemo or radiation that you're in complete remission. It doesn't happen. You can't say cure after a short time. You have to have a 3 to 5 year interval before anyone can tell you're cured. And oftentimes there are cancers that can lay dormant and only arise or recur when there's some insult to your immune system, like a viral infection or like some emotional problem, a divorce, the death of a family member. All those things might weaken your immune system and give you a recurrence. But for instance, the ones that go the longest like that would be breast cancer, which can recur 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years later in the same breast or in the opposite breast, but be the same cancer. Melanomas, skin cancers that can recur years later and then show up in the liver. Or thyroid cancers are another one that recurs slowly, and renal cancers can do that as well. Those are the top ones that have a long latent dormant period. So those are all things to know and realize, and you can never learn enough about cancer because it is the most threat to, other than motor vehicle accidents, which kill more people than cancers, but still the ones that we have little control over are the cancers.
Yeah, they're a mystery, those cells running around. How long will the remission last when you use that vaccine?
Yeah, this is something we're going to learn. We don't know. Will it last 6 months, a year? Will it last 5 years? Or will it be forever? We hope it's forever. Just like pandemics that burn out, and we never see them again, like the Spanish flu, the Hong Kong flu, the chicken flu, the SARS flu. They burn out and we don't see them again, at least in our lifetime. So it's interesting, as you probably all know, when a virus mutates, it becomes less virulent, less serious, like the Omicron virus, which is now more like a head cold or a sinusitis, a brief one that lasts a few days, and as opposed to the parent tumor was the original one, which is the COVID-19 original, that was the worst. The Delta was less bad, and here the Omicron is even very mild, much milder. But older people with comorbidities still die from it. There are still deaths, but there are very few. In fact, there are so few mortalities from the Omicron, they stopped reporting them. They didn't want to report. They'll record the numbers of people infected. There are less hospitalizations, certainly less visits to the ICU or being put on a ventilator or having a terminal episode. So that's just aside from that, cancers are different. When they do mutate, they usually get more aggressive. And they often, drugs that worked before no longer work, supplements that worked before no longer work, and it's a new ball game with them. And oftentimes when that happens, you've exhausted most of the weaponry, so the drugs, there's not too many more drugs that can be given. So now we have the SOT vaccine, which is good for all cancers, not just prostate, the one I mentioned, but it's good for breast, it's good for ovarian cancer. It's good for head and neck cancers. And it's even good for some of the leukemias. So I anticipate that major cancer centers will be using this vaccine in mass within a few years.
Thank you. Is there any other questions?
Yeah, there is. As a matter of fact, this is Karen in Reno, right here in Reno, Nevada. So, Karen, you're welcome to stop by Forsyth Cancer Care Center. But she says, Dr. Forsyth, have you experienced or do you concern or are you concerned with an uptick with cancer due to the vaccinations that have been forced on people due to COVID-19?
Well, thank you for the question, Karen. I know that's on the minds of a lot of people. We don't have answers to that because that usually takes time for that to develop. We do know, for instance, the Spanish flu in the 1917 era when the boys were coming back from Europe after World War I and getting infected. And later on, what turned up was mainly neurologic diseases like Parkinson's disease, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, motor neuron disease, things like that. No relationship was found to any of these vaccines to certain cancers. There's not been a link there, Karen, although everyone's been looking for that for some time. And is there a link to the virus itself or to the vaccine? We don't know. We do know the vaccine has caused some hypercoagulation syndrome in premenopausal women in the age group of 20 to 45 who have high estrogen levels and are often prone to hypercoagulation themselves just from their estrogens. But that only amounts to one case per million in that age group. It hasn't shown up in men as hypercoagulation at all. But in men, we have myocarditis or inflammation showing up in young men from the ages anywhere from 15 to 40 that get inflammation of the heart muscle. And that has usually been transitory and non-permanent and not leaving any cardiomyopathies or damage to the heart muscle, where the heart muscle becomes a flabby sac and has a low ejection fraction of less than 55 in a 50-year-old man. That may happen. So those are the main ones. There's been a few other rare cases of anaphylaxis from the vaccine itself, but no cancers have been recorded to my knowledge. Rare cases of kidney cancer where there's a change in the BUN creatinine or the filtration rate for a time being, it does not seem to be a permanent damage to kidney either. And those are rare as well.
Do you think the government would really tell you the truth?
No.
They're not going to tell you any side effects, are
they? They're hiding a lot of information for sure, and they're overhyping a lot of it, especially with the Omicron. Incidentally, Omicron means the 15th letter in the Greek alphabet. I've mentioned this before because people don't know what this means. It's an O. For your information, you don't have to count up the alphabet. And it's the same letter, O, in the English alphabet. So I guess the O is supposed to mean omnipresent, I guess. That's what people are guessing at, because omnipresent means it's present everywhere, and that's what a pandemic is, really. So that makes sense. But no one, I don't know who really names these pandemics. It might be Grouchy, Fauci, and the Scarf Lady. We'll just blame it on them.
Well, let's blame it on Fauci. I love it, okay?
Okay.
Real quick, if you don't mind, I'm going to go to Ted in Loma Linda. He said, please do not use my last name because I'm embarrassed to report that I have breast cancer. Ted lives in Loma Linda, and he says he's embarrassed that he has breast cancer. And how many men, as opposed to women, do you see, doctor?
Well, it's less than 1% have males have breast cancer, and it's treated similarly as female breast cancer is. The estrogen is tested. If it's positive, then estrogen blockers can be used. Usually, they can get along sometimes just with estrogen blockers alone, especially if the man is over 60 or 70. Their breast will enlarge unilaterally. It doesn't cause man boobs on both sides. And remember, a lot of men who are on testosterone blockers will get man boobs. They're afraid to take off their shirt in the gym. They don't want the guys whistling at them. And they might wear a training bra around town. So those do it. That does happen when they're on estrogen blockers. And, of course, men's testosterone falls very low. And you all remember during puberty, at least you do, Eddie, when your nipples were tender and you wondered what the heck was going on because you had a surge in testosterone. And all of a sudden your nipples started getting tender.
Wow. Well, quite frankly, I don't remember that. But if you remember that it happened to me, I'm concerned.
Well, I wouldn't get that personal.
Okay. Oh, real quick, this is from Danny in Savannah, Georgia. Danny writes in and says, is there a possibility that I could have a telephone exam with you, Dr. Forsyth?
Yeah, Zoom.
Yeah, we do Zooms almost every day of the week. Usually not on Friday, but the Monday through Thursday for sure. And it goes very well. We use them in the morning, and we're on Pacific Coast time, so we do them anywhere from 9 to 11, 12. We may do 3 or 4 a day in some days, and we have a high yield of patients who we talk to on Zoom that end up coming to our office, and often saves them a trip out here. And when they do come in, they usually get the Greek test. And so the Greek test takes a week or two to get back. It comes on my desk and your desk at the same time. And the first question people tell me about when they see the Greek test, and they say, it's all Greek to me. And about 90% of people say they don't understand, because right. It is there's a lot of science behind it. Of course, our colleagues don't think there's any science behind it. But there's nothing more specific to learning about a patient than knowing what his genes are telling you to do for that or that, this or that illness. So I'm totally hooked on it, as you know. And I couldn't be more happy with it, because before I was doing conventional oncology, I was guessing and portraying to the patient that I knew exactly what I was doing, whereas I really didn't. I was making an intelligent guess, and they're still doing that without using the science that's available now and going to the Greeks for the answers.
Wow. Love it. Love it. Doctor, I want to share a personal story real quick, okay, with you, because this is a compliment. And this has to do with Rebecca, who's a longtime listener of Health Matters. She writes in and says, is Dr. Forsyth the same doctor that you told me was really good with bedside manner? And so I want to tell Rebecca that, yes, Becky, he is. And here's my story. I was in the waiting room one day, and I was asked to join a group of your patients as I was walking through. They were having a prayer. And I thought, sure, that as I joined, they would be praying that their cancer was cured. But no, they weren't. They were thanking Dr. Forsyth for taking care of them.
Well, that was very nice.
Isn't that amazing? That is so wonderful. Yeah. I had to pay that compliment on air to you.
Thank you so much, Eddie. That's very wonderful. You know, if I do anything else, well, I've never been good at most things other than medicine, but I do connect with patients because I want to help them, and they know it.
Right. They feel it, obviously. I mean, I was amazed, because that was the first, you know, they were all in unison thanking you, okay, for what you have done for them and the way you have treated them. And that leads to another question that came in from our good friend.
May I answer that a little bit? Because I think modern medicine has divorced us from bedside manner. Oftentimes, doctors now are on electronic gizmos, let's call them, internets and the iPads, and they're not looking at the patient. So their eye contact, I had one patient, doctor one time, who stood sideways to his patient because he said he never wanted to get connected the patient with eye-to-eye contact. And unfortunately, he did retire early, thank God, because he's out of the picture now. But and doctors are on time limits, especially if you're in an HMO like a Kaiser system, where you're expected to see follow-up patients in less than 15 minutes. And some of them carry stopwatches into the room with the patient, and the patient may be telling a horrible story about someone in their family dying or some incident that happened to them, and even in the mid-sentence they will get up and leave the room, and the patient will be hanging in mid-sentence.
Wow.
And the nurse will run in and say, here's two scripts for you. The doctor wrote these earlier, and we want to see you again in 3 months. Thanks for the visit.
Wow.
And
hasta la vista,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, they're out of there. And because they are expected to see four patients an hour.
Wow.
In that system. And if they carry out, or if they go for coffee, or God help them, if they had to go for a long bathroom break, they'd be behind it. So the next patient might only get 7 minutes or 5 minutes.
Is that what's caused, and I can ask either you or Erlene, is that what you think has caused all the, not all, but many of the doctors to go to concierge medicine, where they
I think so, yes. They
limit their number of patients?
Well, yes. Reimbursement, too.
Yeah.
It's caused a lot of them to leave internal medicine, family medicine, and go into aesthetics, or go into something preventative medicine, or go into homeopathy alone. And I've heard all kinds of stories of doctors leaving, going into Chinese medicine, acupuncture alone, and just they want to be able to help patients, but they don't like all the bureaucracy that's entered medicine and the non-personalization of medicine, I call
right,
it.
Right, right.
It's just unhelpful. I'll tell you a quick story for our audience of a patient who had polycystic ovary disease. I'm not going to mention any names here. Polycystic ovary means that the cysts in her body from on her ovaries were present since her menarche, since she started having periods. And she was unable to get pregnant because this causes infertility, even taking a lot of fertility drugs and shots of progesterone and other things. She was unable to get pregnant for at any time. And finally, in her early 50s, she started developing pain in the pelvis area, and she went down to Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles, considered to be one of the best cancer hospitals in Southern California. And the doctors said, yes, you need a hysterectomy, an oophorectomy. She did that, and the results came back, no malignant cells found. I saw the patient, I looked at the pictures of her surgery, I said, this looks bad, let's do the Greek test. And the Greek test, 2 weeks later, showed cancer.
Wow. That's why you care so much. This is Forsyth Cancer Care Center at 521 Hamel Lane, right here in Reno, Nevada. Call them 775-827-0707.